Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, I have with me guest Sam Francis. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you.
Great stuff. And I wonder if you would mind introducing yourself to my audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be involved with the project called Grow Feral.
Sure, yeah. So I live in Weston-super-Mare. I've been here for nearly 3 years. I moved here from Bristol. And I've got an arts background, so I've worked for a long time as a creative producer. And a couple of years ago developed a project called Grow Feral, which is what I'm talking to you today. So that's a project that came into being just sort of shortly after lockdown. And it's sort of continuing in different guises, ongoing really since then. So it's a project that combines my sort of interests in gardening and the natural world and growing things with creativity, essentially, in a nutshell.
Fantastic. So were you the main driver behind the Grow Feral idea, or were you one of a team, or did someone else come up with the idea and then approach you?
It was a bit serendipitous, actually, because I was volunteering on a community allotment project in Weston called Osprey, and community plot, which is 12 plots on a big allotment site that had been historically a community allotment for many years, but they'd taken it over as new ownership. And so I was sort of developing a new polytunnel project with them for about 6 months. Then I started to sort of think about some other workshops that I'd like to do with them, and bringing some sort of creativity into some of the things that I was doing there already. And then I got approached by an organisation in Weston called Culture Weston to see if I wanted to develop a sort of creative community project. And so I sort of had a little think about it, and I thought, oh, this could be a really good opportunity to sort of link those two things together, because they were offering me a bit of money, so it was a funded project. And so I sort of came up with the idea of Grow Feral, really, to cross those two things, the green and the arts and the creativity. And so that's sort of how it started, really.
Okay, awesome. So I think now it's probably wise to tell us what Grow Feral is.
Well, I think it's evolving, really. So I think it started off as a one-off sort of series of projects, really. So I did a number of workshops at the community allotment. We got someone in to help us to design and build and make a clay oven, and work towards a sort of big open day where we would have community feast together. And then I did a series of botanical plant printing sessions as well. So using different plant material and different plant matter, and looking at different printing methods, such as cyanotypes, which is a method of printing that you sun to expose paper, so you get a almost like an x-ray print, really, of whatever you put on top of the paper. And so it's a blue and white print, which is where the original blueprint came from, actually. So did a session on that, and then I was also experimenting quite a lot of the time for my own sort of practice with monoprinting, which is using different types of ink to get different impressions from leaves and plants. So you press a leaf or a petal or you know, the body of a plant with a stem and everything on it, and then there's different ways of getting prints from that plant depending on whether it's been pressed or whether it's fresh. And if it's fresh, you might get some of the pigment that comes directly from the plant itself as well. So just sort of really playing around and experimenting with different ways of getting visual plants, really.
So your background then, Sam, is it horticultural or is it artistic or is it both? How have you come to be the person who ties all these things together?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've developed a lot of projects in the past, creative projects. So that's my sort of, that's been my mainstay for a long time. But I've always been like a really avid gardener, and particularly over the past sort of 4 or 5 years since I moved to Weston, really, and had my own garden. I've just put lots of time and energy into that. And I think, you know, and I think a lot of people will relate to this, that, you know, during lockdown, like having a garden was like a total luxury. And I was like eternally grateful for having that space to sort of experiment with, really. And so, yeah, I built a planter and started trying to grow some veg, which I had done in the past, but not with as much focus. So, yeah, just let it sort of overtake me, really. And I just got really, really into it. And so, hence, volunteering on this project. And then I signed up to do a one-year horticulture course, which I finished last year. So really just trying to sort of explore different avenues, really, and wanted, really as well, wanting to be on the computer less, which a lot of my work is sort of sitting behind a screen, and just having a real desire to be outside and use my hands and make things and do things and, you know, be with the earth a little bit more, really.
Yeah, yeah. So my path crossed with, not yours personally, but the downstream effects of your work, as I mentioned in my first email when we started speaking a few months ago, in a town called Yeovil. Now, I don't know, did you personally have any involvement in the project that happened there or not?
No, I didn't. I didn't know. I do know a couple of people who live in Yeovil, but I haven't seen them in a while.
Well, it was this amazing thing. I obviously like to grow as much of my own food as possible, and I'm very into that, and I'm connected into the world of producing as much as you can to meet your needs, you know, reducing the gap between our own personal production and consumption. And I was walking through Yeovil Town Centre, which isn't something I do a great deal, and there were these giant, like almost like bathtubs, but imagine like twice the size of a regular bathtub, literally in the center of Yeovil, up through the main street, through the main shopping street. And in it was nothing but edible plants. There were nasturtiums and squash and all sorts of things, tomatoes, just completely edible plants. And I can't remember for the life of me now what I did that got me from there to emailing you, but there was something on there that was linked to the Grow Feral project. So I'm just wondering how that spider web has looked from the other side of the looking glass, what you've seen happen and how you think you might have, or your project that you've been involved with has led to projects similar to the one I saw in Yeovil.
Oh, well, I mean, this is the first I've heard of it, so it's really intriguing. Great to hear that, though, because, I mean, yeah, for me, I suppose over the years, even when I was living in Bristol, seeing those sort of community, like, planted beds, you know, just in the middle of town or on, the, you know, the slip of a strip of land by the train station or whatever, always found that really thrilling and actually really interesting as well, that people don't actually want to pick the stuff, is what I've sort of observed.
Yeah, yeah.
Time as well, that there's a resistance, like people don't want to be seen to be sort of taking free stuff or something. I don't know, it's a sort of, I wonder if it's there's like a mindset that we have of, you know, not wanting to be discovered to be taking things. Is that what that's what it's for, essentially? But yeah, I love those sort of planters and those spaces, because they're like the opposite to traditional planting, aren't they, that you see in town centres, that are just planters filled with pansies and posies and stuff, you know?
Yeah, 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 for sure.
So having this sort of wild, what I wanted to sort of bring into the town centre in Weston. So we just made last year just a very small garden, sort of 6 hexagonal planters and a couple of seats, and we did what you're saying there, is like filled it with a variation of stuff, like evergreen herbs and you know, edible flowers and tomatoes and stuff over the summer as well. And it's just really nice to see that sort of planting, I think, in the town centre, as a contrast to the sort of pink and purple pots of things.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that I don't want to come across as disparaging flowers or anything like that, but for me there's something very, very special about plants you can eat being grown in the community. I think if done right, it can really bring people together in a way that flowers doesn't. Flowers are fantastic and they're beautiful and they can really make things look lovely, but they don't necessarily bring people together the same way that we as a species are brought together around food. That's my feeling. And I'm wondering what your sort of the projects that you have been directly involved in, starting at the Osprey community site, because that's is that sort of the hub for you?
Yes. I've spent quite a lot of time there over the past couple of years. Yeah, and then I've worked for them a little bit now as well and done some of the projects. I would like to go there more than I do, but other things taken over really this year. But I did a project working with a group to make a sensory garden, which didn't have that many edibles, but it had some. But yeah, essentially, it's the place that I can go to grow things on a much bigger scale. Like, my garden's really small, so I've only got tomatoes and salads and radish, and that's about it. So for anything more, I would go to Osprey.
And from there, reaching out from there, so Culture Western is an organization that they host the Grow Feral webpage, is that right? And are they sort of an overarching organization that sits atop Grow Feral, or am I misreading that?
I suppose they originally sort of commissioned the project to come into life, really. I guess that's the connection, but now it's sort of moved beyond that and it's taking its own sort of life form a little bit. So I am actually going to set up a Grow Feral website, because I've done quite a few more projects this year, and I've been approached to do another couple of projects actually as well. So I think it's sort of becoming its own thing, really. It wouldn't have happened without Culture Western support initially, but it's found out that it's just sort of got its own wings and flying away a little bit, which is wonderful. And I think that there's a lot of call down this way for sort of green activity for people. So there's like green social prescribing seems to be quite a big thing now. So we managed to get a small grant to do some sessions with people this year in the town through that, and I think that's being pushed forward quite a lot more, that agenda. So that's really interesting. I think I don't know what it's like down by you, whether it's fed down.
I don't think it's necessarily localized at all. I think it's virtually global, and I've spoken to people recently who are developing permaculture food forests and you know, as community spaces, and they're saying that when they originally started, one of the things that they thought was going to be one of the biggest barriers to sort of scaling the idea was getting hold of land. But he said it was the absolute opposite. People are throwing land at him far more than he's going to be able to use, and I just think there's a thirst for reconnection with nature and reconnection with where our food comes from and all of those things. I think the pandemic has acted as a catalyst to really drive something that was already there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what you think about something I said earlier about how people feel about taking food from community sort of planters, and you know that.
Yeah, well, I did have some quite strong thoughts straight away, but they're purely based on my initial feelings. But I would think that it's and it's almost a shame to have to do it, but I think it would just warrant some signage that kind of tells people, instructs them, because there is a. For me, at least, it would more be a case of it doesn't feel like mine. It doesn't feel like I have the right to take that. Whereas if there was a sign saying, please help yourself, I think that might change things. Because just the same as the flowers that I mentioned earlier that are grown in municipal places, in our town centres and what have you, I kind of have the... without with the absence of a sign or something telling me otherwise, I kind of feel that just like it would be rude and naughty of me to pick those flowers and take them home, I kind of would feel the same about the courgettes.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree.
So I think it's more about like the social contract that we kind of feel we're all in, that, that anything that's grown in the public space isn't really to be picked, whether you're in a park or anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly. And no one wants to be at the end of a tut at someone tutting at you, you know, in public
No,
space.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
So fun.
Yeah, but I think maybe just some signage might be the only thing that needs to open that door. And then who knows, you know, in time maybe it will just become more normalized.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think as well this sort of idea of a community garden sort of self sustaining and like looking after itself with enough investment from individuals within the community of which the garden's located as well. I think that is something that when I set up the initial Grow Feral garden in town last year, I sort of got it going, and then I thought, oh well, I'll do that aspect of the sort of trying to get people to sort of be part of it after that. Mm-hmm. But it's actually been like quite challenging because there's a lot of people that helped get it going, and then once it was in place it was like the sort of enthusiasm died off a little bit. So you know, it's been difficult since it's been in place last summer to, you know, round to now it's me and maybe one or two other people that have maintained it and had to water it and stuff, which, you know, it takes quite a lot of labor commitment in terms of your time. So interesting to think about that as well, and how to make that much more of a collective action, I suppose.
Yeah, I wonder if some sort of almost subscription model wouldn't work, mm-hmm. whereby you almost, you know, you paid a very small amount, a nominal amount for the right to go there and pick stuff, and then that amount paid for the maintenance. I wonder if that might be, and I know that commercializing it in that way is kind of counterintuitive to the idea of a communal garden, but ultimately I think that there's two sides to that coin, and I think that it might give people, you know, personally within themselves, it might give them the ability to give themselves permission to go down there and just pick vegetables without feeling bad, and at the same time solve the other problem of you know, it being looked after, and it could even be an optional subscription so that those people that we want to encourage to go there who would struggle, you know, and we're trying to help are able to do so. But at the same time, those people who perhaps feel like, well, that's not really for me, would feel the ability to, because they're paying for the privilege, something like that. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess there's lots of different ways of doing it. I want to go and visit. There's I think it's an incredible edible one. It's on Avonmouth train station. That's been going for a few years. I want to try and visit that at some point soon. So that looks really interesting how they set that up, because we've actually been approached to develop a strip of land at the train station in Weston, actually, over the winter, just to sort of get it going. With a group of people from probation services, which is really exciting. It's actually quite a big bit of land, but it's got quite a lot of established trees and bushes, but it needs a lot of sort of cutting back and thinking about how to make that into a space that could be used by rail workers and people travelling on the railways, but as well as sort of community groups as well. And I think that there's quite a few around the country, actually, train station community gardens popping up, which is sort of interesting. I think maybe the rail people are quite open to things, which makes it easier to sort of get permissions to do things, I think.
Yeah, there's something strangely romantic about that, isn't there? The train station community garden. I like that.
Yeah, just like transient passing by and just spotting a lovely tended growing space. Yeah, it's appealing.
And you are obviously trying to incorporate permaculture principles into a lot of what you do, I've noticed as well. Is that something that's been in your background?
Not tons. I mean, I don't know tons about permaculture. One of the sessions that we did last year for the first Grow Feral project is that we brought someone in who has a background in permaculture, and we did a 2-day session with him, and that was to basically work towards designing together what a potential sort of community small growing space might look like. And that's what turned into the sort of growth garden that's in town now. And so it was very simple because, you know, we're obviously restricted because of budget and stuff. But we were looking at a lot of sort of shapes in nature. So we sort of co-opted the hexagons of a beehive to create planters from. But yeah, that's sort of like that idea of, I suppose, cyclical activity was something that we were sort of thinking about as well in terms of planting and, you know, how we sort of create something together.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and thinking like the forest, I like that thing.
Yeah, and of course, doing that, plugging into that way of thinking, the permaculture way of thinking, you're going to solve some of your other problems to a degree as well, insofar as you're going to be creating spaces that don't require as much maintenance as a traditional garden plot. So it kind of feeds both sides of that, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I suppose actually, because so the garden space that I've been talking about, we got a little bit of funding from a green prescribing thing this year. And one of the things that, as I've sort of mentioned already, really, but is the difficulty of maintaining this garden, particularly during the summer when it was really hot. It's like, you know, it's how the hell do you water it? You know, how do you keep it maintained so that it's going to produce things? So I started talking to this artist called Joe Lathwood, who works with quite a lot of sort of sustainable materials, but also looks at like the lifespan of whatever she creates and wants it to sort of either have an additional life after she's made something, or she's sort of looking at how things can be sustainable in just their sort of being. And so I was talking to her about like the difficulties of like maintaining this garden, and she said, oh, I've been looking into these like how to create a sort of solar system. Her partner's a gardener, that would basically like self-water. So she basically sort of designed, through these conversations that we had, she's designed this amazing system that basically collects rainwater and funnels it into a water butt. And then this incredible solar system thing, which has a pump in it, is linked up to these sort of irrigation pipes that then feed back through, down through the planters, and they have little drip feeders, and they drip feed the planters water every, I don't know, I think it's every like or something. You can set it to different levels depending on what the weather's like. And that's basically what we've done this year, which is just like a total revelation. And we just got it in place last week or the week before. So it's sort of really exciting to see how that's going to go over, particularly next summer.
Yeah. Yeah. And who knows what next summer and the subsequent summers will throw at us with the current state of play. It's really difficult to know where we'll be, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But what's really interesting about this, just to pick up on the permaculture connection with the sort of water system that she's created, is so I think it's supposed to be like really a lot more efficient than watering the plants with a watering can or a hose as well, this sort of method of drip watering, basically. And you know, obviously the sort of amount of labor, like human labor as well, and the amount of water used is actually, so it makes the whole thing actually much more like viable in a sort of sustainable way.
And obviously by I'm imagining you're using a, you know, a drip feeding system that runs along the ground and isn't up in the air. So you're getting the water just underneath the foliage. So you're not going to lose as much to evaporation, and it's going to get where the plants need it. So all good stuff. So what is the state of the Grow Feral project as we think about it in 2022? Because are you still running workshops this year like you did when you started, or do things look slightly different now?
Yeah, I'd say we've done more this year in a way. Well, I guess it's, you know, the things that we started last year have just sort of been built on, really. Excuse me. So I've done some sort of similar workshops, but working with artists who are working with natural materials, mm-hmm. And looking at how to sort of connect green things with creative things. And so there's a park here called Grove Park, and so they have lots of different parts to their area. They've got a community veg patch, but they've also got just sort of standard municipal park sort of layouts, but we've been sort of working with them and their communities to do different projects as well, but more one-off workshops. And then what I just told you about the watering system, that's been the big thing this year, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, in conversation about things next year already, which is great.
Fantastic. So are all the workshops finished for this year? I noticed on the website it's got them listed for sort of June and July.
Yeah, we've actually got like a couple of events coming up. So there's big Green Week, I think, which starts next week or the week afterwards. And so Culture Western are doing a program called Green Futures, and Grow Feral, we're going to do a session. Joe, who designed the water tower structure, we're going to do a sort of tour and a talk about the installation and the garden, and try and use that as an opportunity for people to get involved in looking after the space ongoing.
Yeah.
And so that's on Saturday, the 24th of September in the afternoon. And then I think on the 9th of October, there's an arts and health festival. So I'm going to do something in the afternoon as part of that as well. So it'll be some sort of creative activity out Grow Feral space in town.
Great.
I don't know what
great.
Yet.
and the sort of sessions that you have been running, what are people doing when they turn up? You've been doing, because you've got like green arts workshops, mm-hmm. but then separately growing sessions. So what do they entail?
Well, there's a few people that came along to help plant the new garden area. So when the structure had been put up a couple of weeks ago, so we then spent the afternoon together sort of looking at identifying different types of plants and looking at what goes where, what goes with what, in terms of locating plants and, you know, where you would put them and what size things are going to grow to, and just that sort of, you know, basic knowledge that, you know, that when you're sort of used to gardening and growing, you sort of maybe assume that people have that knowledge, but they don't. And, you know, a lot of people don't know how to plant things in the ground properly, you know, and water things in. That basic stuff is actually, you know, people really get a lot out of. Just getting your hands in the dirt is just amazing, isn't it? And some people don't have the opportunity to do that. Yeah, we've done some seed saving as well, which is something I really enjoy doing. I'm obsessed with seed saving and collecting. I've got tons of little packages and things all just around my house randomly.
Good for you. Yeah. I think when you start down this road, I think it's just a natural progression, isn't it? Seed saving is one of the natural steps, particularly if you start thinking about permaculture, and it's all about closing those circles and doing a little bit less purchasing in the store when you don't need to, and being sort of self-reliant, etc. They are all just very, very exciting and feed into one another.
Definitely, yeah. I'm really into wildflowers, and so that's, you know, identifying wildflowers and just sort of going on walks with people and just pointing out identifying wildflowers and the verges and stuff, you know. So that's something that we've done as well.
Fantastic. So I've run through all of my questions, Sam. Is there anything you would have liked to have hit on that I have missed? Is there anything you want to talk about that we haven't mentioned yet? And don't feel you have to say yes.
Let's see. I mean, I'm definitely pleased that I managed to talk about the water installation, which is, I'm so excited about that. I just really hope that it goes really well and it works really well, because we'd really like this to be able to be something that, you know, that other people can use as well, in terms of thinking about how to sort of maintain community garden and the labour. I'm sort of really excited to see how that goes. Because, it's essentially, it could be a completely amazing system that means that, you know, you hardly have to do much work, which is fantastic.
a big step in the evolution.
Exactly. I don't know. I'm not sure. I've mentioned the train station project, haven't I? Yeah. Has the Yeovil got a good train station? Maybe we could get a project going down there.
Yeah, it has. It's it's got a big one just outside the town, actually.
Oh, okay. So it got a little strip of land that you could make a garden in?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it would be lovely to get a load of train station gardens up across the country.
Yeah. So do you have like a connection at the rail networks that you kind of deal with, or how does it work?
So there's a lady at an organisation called Seven Side, and I think they are maybe a community trust. I don't know whether they're just southwest. Seven Side sounds like it might be a sort of one sort of arm of a railway somehow, but and then GWR, it's hard to sort of work out who does what, really, when you're having these meetings with people. But yeah, GWR and Seven Side are who we've been talking with. But yeah, it all seems to be sort of possible, which is great.
Please carry on.
Oh, that's okay. They mentioned Taunton, actually, I think is starting a big train station garden, which is towards your way, I think, a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, worth checking that out as well, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe we should try and connect again in a year or so and see what's happened.
Yeah, great. I've got a question for you. So,
oh, wow.
In terms of... because you're obviously more into the growing veg side of things.
Yeah.
Which I would like the planters that... Now we've got twice as many planters in the Italian gardens in the town centre. Would like to try and grow more veg there next year. Do you have any tips for me on what would be some good things to grow and how to go about it?
Well, I mean, if you're trying to get as much as possible out of a small space... then I would definitely have the old favourites. You've got to have a courgette or two, but they can take up quite a bit of space. So yeah, I mean, I would have one of them maybe at either end and have them trailing out the side.
Yeah,
and then maybe on the northern side a little trellis that you could have some beans growing up, and then. Some tomatoes in front of that, and then you could just fill all that space in between with really fast stuff that could just be like cycled through and replaced. So things like spinach that's really, really quick, and some radishes, and then squeeze loads of spring onions and things like that. And I think because I think when you try and grow too much of one thing in one space, particularly in a raised bed, they're all competing for the same nutrients. So if you can, rather than do that, have like one or two tomato plants, and then all around the base of them five or six different things like radishes and a spinach and some spring onions and all these things that only take a few weeks, and just cycle through them, I think that's probably the best way to get the most exciting crop, and you know, it'd be constantly changing, and some nasturtiums as well, because they're beautiful.
Always, yes. Nasturtiums and calendula, always.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. Great, that's really exciting. Yeah, because I mean, we did grow a few things in there this year, But because it was so hot and because of the labour and being away and stuff, it was, and you know, the lack of people to sort of maintain it, it was difficult, really. We didn't really get tons of stuff at all. So
mulch, mulch is my other big tip then. Absolutely, mulch, mulch, mulch. Are you doing that already?
Yeah, we did do a bit of that, yeah, at the start of the season, but we didn't do it like continually, really.
I think getting like a really good 3 or 4 inches of mulch on there just can reduce the amount of labor massively, because you're going to be weeding a lot less, if at all, and you're going to water a lot less, because it helps with the moisture retention. Although in a raised bed, you know, there's going to be an element of watering, whatever you do.
Yeah. Well, we've got the self-watering system, so hopefully we won't need to worry about that at all.
Even in the raised beds. Great.
Yeah, that's where it is. Yeah, it's just in the raised beds.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, mm-hmm. Perfect. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll send you a photo, actually.
Yeah, you must.
It's pretty spectacular.
Awesome. Yeah, so I've got three quick fire questions that I ask all my guests, Sam.
Okay.
And one of them, now I'm normally talking to people who are sort of homesteaders or, you know, raise a lot of their own food. So most of them keep chickens or goats or some kind of animal. So this one, I don't know how well it'll suit you, but I'll ask it nonetheless. If you could only keep one type of animal, what would it be?
I've got a cat. So I'll
there
keep
you go.
A cat. Yeah.
And the next one, if you could only grow one plant, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. That's tricky. So you want something that's edible, but I'd also want something that's pretty. I would maybe go nasturtium, actually. I would maybe go for nasturtium. Yeah, let's do that.
And finally, if you could send a text message to yourself 5 years ago, what would you say?
Oh God. Move to Weston.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Well, thank you ever so much for your time, Sam.
You're welcome.
Please do stay in touch, and hopefully
we'll
catch up again soon.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks. Take care. Nice
thank
to
you,
chat.
Sam. Thank you. Bye. This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face-to-face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/self-sufficient hub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.